Download Gundelio for free today and start saving money. Get alerts to hot deals by walking into a gun store. Plus, offers, new products, and videos sent straight to your smartphone. Get your gear for less. Gundelio.com.
Gun Talk is here. I'm Tom Gresham. I'm the host of where we talk about, well, guns, ammo, shooting, collecting, hunting, competition. Yeah, we'll talk politics too, of course, because, well, that's what we do here, because we call this Gun Talk. If you'd like to be part of this, give me a call, 866-TALK-GUN or Tom Talk Gun. Either way, you'll get to the same place. Gee, because it's the same number. We have a lot of fun around here, as you may well know. Everybody's talking about the election, and some say it's not over yet. Some say it is over yet, as far as the president's, you know, race, but part of it's not over yet. And that may end up being, honestly, the most important part of it. We have two races in Georgia that we need to talk about. Joining me to talk about that is my good friend, shooting partner, and just good buddy. He's the president of the Louisiana Shooting Association, as well as a real serious competitive shooter. Dan Zelenka joins us right now. Hey, Dan, you been out at the range?
I have been out at the range.
What'd you shoot?
Had a good day. Zeroed in some hunting pistols. Of course, because I'm so smart, I managed to leave ammunition at home for one of them. But
well, that's what happens when you take a bunch of different guns to the range sometimes.
I did. I ended up working with some revolvers and out at 100 yards. So
what caliber?
Are okay. 454 Casull and a 44 Magnum.
What you gonna hunt?
Might be them four-legged deer things.
Okay, good man. Okay, that'll work. And I've seen you shoot. I think you could probably hit something at 100 yards with one of those.
Hey, man, when there's lead in the air, it's dangerous.
That's right. There's hope, at least. All right, so you called me this morning, and you were fired up because you really wanted to talk about these Senate races in Georgia. I mean, it's weird. I don't know if it's unique, if it's ever happened before. We have both Senate races in one state that are going to a runoff, and you might just kind of set it up of what this means and where we are with the balance in the Senate.
Well, literally, it is for all the marbles. And the reason I say that is if the Republicans take those two Senate seats, nothing will happen bad in the next 2 years, at least in my estimation. The main thing is the filibuster will remain intact. As long as the filibuster remains intact, it requires 60 votes to get something through the Senate. The Democrats cannot put together 60 votes for anything that's important to us as gun owners.
Right.
There's no way they're going to put together 60 votes to get rid of or to create an assault weapon ban. And more importantly, there's no way they'll put together those votes to get rid of the Protection and Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. Okay. And that, why I say more importantly, if an assault weapon ban passes, there's more than a reasonable chance that we could, that it would be declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court.
Okay.
Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, I don't think you've got the same constitutional safeguard there.
I think you're right. And for those who are wondering what we're talking about, this is the law that was passed a number of years ago because the gun ban lobby got together and said, hey, we can sue gun makers out of existence if we can try to find them liable for the misuse of perfectly safe, non-malfunctioning guns. You know, basically, the criminal misuse of guns, we'll say the gun makers are responsible for that. They had, like, what, 30 lawsuits going at one time? And all they need, I mean, at least according to the gun makers, all they need is one of those to hit, and the insurance companies won't insure gun companies anymore.
They don't even need one to hit. All they need is enough of them out there that insurance companies are paying lawyers to defend them. And, of course, it's going to be very fact-specific. There's going to be a lot of discovery. There's going to be a lot of costs. And when insurance companies pay enough, they're going to do one of two things. They're either not going to write the coverage, or they're going to raise the rates to a point where, you know, maybe Colt and Ruger can afford it. You know, probably not Colt, but maybe Ruger can afford it.
Right.
Smith and Wesson, I mean, they're publicly traded, but the smaller makers, you know, the Sons of Liberty of the world, will have just a terrible time trying to get insurance. And without insurance, you cannot be in business.
No. So basically, the gun makers, a lot of gun makers, if not all gun makers, go away if you lose this law. Because the Protection Law for Commerce and Arms Act says you cannot hold a gun maker responsible for the misuse of a product. Now, if it's a defective product, you can hold them responsible. If the gun maker or the store breaks the law, knowingly breaks the law, yes, you could hold them responsible. But if they're obeying the law and they're making a safe product, you can't blame them because some doofus goes out, blows his foot off, or robs a bank.
Correct.
Okay, so what you're saying is, if the Democrats get control of Congress, I mean, and just to put a fine point on so people understand, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have already said they want to do away with this Protection Law for Commerce and Arms Act. They've already said they want to institute a ban on semi-automatic rifles. They have already said they would like to put a $200 tax on every standard capacity magazine out there. And that's the kind of things that could slide right through the Senate.
Well, you got to remember, Joe Biden was the head of the Judiciary Committee and one of the authors of the 1994 assault weapon ban. It's not like it's an idle threat. He has done it before.
He's already done it. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, you don't have to listen to what he says. Watch what he has done.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So I think that gun control will be a major theme for them. And you know, if we hold the Senate, it's going nowhere. If we don't hold the Senate, the first thing I could foresee Schumer doing is to get rid of the filibuster rule. Mm-hmm. If he only needs a simple majority, we've got problems. And it doesn't stop there, okay? Because we're sitting with a nice majority on the Supreme Court. If he gets rid of the filibuster rule, he can change the number of justices on the Supreme Court.
The dominoes
that could fall by giving the Democrats a majority of the Senate are beyond belief.
Because then they would have control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. Basically, they could do whatever they want to do at that point.
Yes. And it's somewhat like the first 2 years of Obama's first president,
his term.
Mm-hmm. When he was first term, thank you. They had 60 votes, so they didn't need, I mean, the filibuster was ineffective against them, so
right.
They could do whatever they wanted. Unfortunately, they didn't press any of the gun issues, which is kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm.
They burned up their political capital on Obamacare. But at that point in time, the Republicans basically had no say in anything that went on.
Fast forward to this. We have two runoff elections. What if you don't live in, obviously, if you live in Georgia, you need to vote. If you live in Georgia, you got to make sure you're registered to vote, and you still can register. They now have time to do that again. But if you don't live in Georgia and you can't vote there, what do?
You can always send money because you can believe that this is going to be the most expensive senatorial election in history. I mean, Michael Bloomberg spent $100 million just in Florida, you know.
I'm going to make a prediction. I think that between those two runoff races, it's not inconceivable we could see $1 billion spent.
It's not inconceivable because it is so important. And you know, I talked a little bit about Obama's first term. When he was elected, there was a blue tidal wave that came in. Mm-hmm. I mean, 60 Democratic senators, just a pile of House members, and they were predicting it. The news media were predicting that occurring this go-round. Actually, if you don't count the presidential election, the Republicans did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the down ballot stuff, if we win these two seats in Georgia, we will be down one net Senate seat. Not too shabby when right. they were predicting we would be down 10.
And we went up okay. 5 in the House.
At least 5. That's 5 confirmed. We may be up as many as 10 before it's all over with.
I hope.
Now, that being said, that's 5 taken away from the Democrats, but there were 5 open seats. Okay,
right.
So I don't know how the exact numbers end up, but we could end up as much as 10 ahead of where we started. And then the most, well, extremely important, because this is a redistricting year, the state houses. And the Democrats took a hard run at the state houses, especially in Texas,
right?
Because they wanted to control those houses for
redistricting.
The redistricting
sure.
of the House, of the federal House districts. And the Democrats walked away with a net minus 2 state houses. So other than the president, okay, we didn't do too badly. And it's really funny because I sat down at my desk right before your assistant called me, and I looked, and it says, Romney says election and endorsement of conservative views. And I'd almost hate to quote Senator Romney, but Senator Mitt Romney said Republican gains in many down-ballot races in last week's election were an endorsement of conservative principles, while losing the White House was a referendum on a person. And he may very well be correct.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, and if we can hold Georgia, then I think he is correct. If we lose Georgia, you know.
Yeah, we're going to return to this a good bit. Dan, I'm going to get you back on here probably next week, because we're also working on a really important lawsuit and a concept here in Louisiana. And for those who don't know already, Dan is not only the president of the Louisiana Shooting Association, but he is a practicing attorney as well as a machine gun dealer and just kind of an all-around gun nut like me. So, true?
Yeah, I resemble that remark.
Yes, you do. Exactly right. All right. Look, I got to go. I appreciate your time, sir. I appreciate the call this morning. And we're going to work on this, because these two races in Georgia, as you say, really are for all the marbles. Oh, yeah. Louisiana Shooting Association. If you're not a member, I'm just going to say, people, get involved. You got to do that. Whatever your state group is, you got to get involved. Hey, Dan, thank you so much. We'll get you on here again next week, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Talk
Take
to you
care. All right. 866-TALK-GUN. Yes, we open lines right now. John's on. Don't go anywhere, John. We won't talk to you, but we have room for you now if you want to give us a holler. Again, 866-TALK-GUN.
Raise your firearms to a better way of buying your silencer. We are Silencer Central, creators of a revolutionary process in which headaches and hassles are forever silenced by simplicity and common sense. It's a process that begins with paperwork without the work and ends with delivery right to your front door. Learn more about Silencer Central's easy buying process at silencercentral.com or call 888-781-8778.
A passion for shooting and hunting has driven product innovation at Hodgson Powder Company since 1947. Innovations like black powder substitutes, muzzle-loading pellets, and smokeless powder features like anti-copper fouling agents or temperature insensitivity. A family business from the beginning, Hodgson Powder Company is the largest U.S. supplier of smokeless black powder and black powder substitute propellants distributed under the Hodgson, IMR, Winchester, Pyrodex, 777, and GOX brands. Hodgson Powder Company, the gunpowder people.
In 2020, Brownells continues its tribute to Eugene Stoner, the legendary designer of the AR-15, AR-180, and more. The What Would Stoner Do 2020 rifle answers the question of what Stoner would have done with modern lightweight materials. Inspired by another Stoner design, Brownells BRN-180 lower receivers help complete firearms optimized for folding stocks or pistol braces. Visit Brownells.com today and pay tribute to one of America's greatest firearm engineers.
All right, back. back with you straight to the phones. John's in Richmond, Virginia on 4. Hello, John. Thank you for your patience. I appreciate you hanging through that.
Not a problem. Thank you for taking the call. I'm enjoying the show over the summer.
Cool. What you got going here?
I got a couple of range reports for you.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, you had talked about, and I don't have a radio station in my area that carries your station, so I've always been catching up on podcasts. So I've been, first time I've actually listening to it live, but talking about hunting with an AR-15 6.5 Grendel, and didn't know if that was a plausible thought or not. And I have, and I built and I would suggest the AR-15 itself, probably not the best one to do it because it's heavy. It's really heavy. It's not going to be a lugging around the woods kind of gun. Like, that's uncomfortable depending on how you build your AR-15. But I think if you had that style platform rifle cut down to carbine length, it would be awesome. And certainly if you put a suppressor on it, and then like I did.
Okay. So you have hunted with a 6.5 Grendel?
Yes, sir. Yes,
how'd it work?
It's fantastic. And so my first deer kill with it, I bought the Howa mini action bolt action 6.5 Grendel. And
for
the ammo's interchangeable between both guns. I'm like, this is because it's an awesome little round. And because I've also shot steel with the AR-15 out to 1,000 yards before. It's a really accurate gun. It's a sub-half-minute gun, I would say. And it works really well. So I had screwed the suppressor onto the front of the bolt rifle, the Howa mini action. Got to where I was hunting, and there's actually two bucks fighting in the middle of the field. And, you know, put the bipod down, and it sounded like a cap gun going off. And one of them dropped, and the other one thought he won the fight.
The winner and still champion.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
That's great. It's a really, really great round. I shoot the Hornady 123, the AMAX bullet out of it, or, you know, whatever is available at this point.
Right. Cool. All right, you also had a thought on bullet ricochet. What are you thinking here?
Yeah, so I've been playing around with my 300 Blackout. It's a carbine length suppressed, obviously. And I was doing some load development with some IMR 4198. And I started out with the starting load for that powder, 11.5 grains, and worked down to 9.5. I was shooting at 25 yards, basically standing up height, shooting down at the ground into relatively soft dirt. Mm-hmm. Didn't think anything of it. And the berm for the 100-yard range is 75 yards down the range.
You're bouncing them over the berm, aren't you?
I think that's what happened, because the neighbor came by with a video, was like, hey, what's going on over here? I got bullets whizzing over my house. Luckily, nothing was harmed and no one got hurt, thank goodness. But I just had a really hard time. I'm almost shooting directly into the ground, but is it a function of the shape of those long, 190 to 220 bullets, the weight of that, not going fast enough to disintegrate when it hits the dirt, or is it a function of it really just flat enough, just that perfect mix of physics to make it tumble?
How far away is the neighbor?
Like a half a mile. I'm shooting subsonic loads, which was mind-boggling to me. Like, it has that much energy to get there.
It is an interesting, and I'll address that in a second, but I do want to talk about one thing. I've experienced that, where you're thinking, I got 100-yard range, I got a berm down there, but I'm going to put some targets down here at 25 yards. And then only after a while I realized I'm hitting the ground somewhere before I get to the berm and very possibly bouncing stuff over the berm. It's just, it's one of those deals, you're just concentrating on the target, you're not thinking about it, and then you realize, holy cow, I've been throwing, and yes, they're ricocheting. So to your immediate question is, how far does the bullet go? If it's 800 yards, which is a half mile, I could see that. He's probably getting the zing going over his head.
They had a really good video of it, too.
and it's not going to go nearly as far as if you shot it into the air that far, because my guess is they are probably tumbling at that point, and they're making that crazy sound. How far can you throw a football if you spiral it versus if you try to throw it and it's flipping end over end? It's just not going to go nearly as far. But it is concerning to him, and certainly to you, because you want to make sure your shots are safe, and you're not wanting to be flinging bullets into the neighborhood like that. It is an issue, whether it's a factor of long, flat bullets or the angle or anything else. You got to know where your bullets end up. So, that's one of those deals that if you're at a range where you can do it, you simply walk up and put your targets in front of the berm.
Right, yeah. And that's what I did. The second time I went out for more load development, I just walked up to the berm and walked off 25 steps and
exactly, so. Yeah, exactly. That's the deal. So, I don't know how far a bullet goes. I don't think anybody would know how far a bullet's going to go if it's ricochets, because you don't know what it's doing out there. Is it wobbling or is it actually tumbling? And probably you could shoot 10 bullets and they're going to do a lot of different things if you bounce them off of the ground. But I have certainly been to ranges where I'm hearing bullets zing like that. And you think, okay, there's something wrong with the design of the range or where people are shooting or where they put their targets up. Because if you're shooting straight into a berm, you should never get a ricochet. And the minute you get a ricochet, you need to stop and figure out what's going on, because at that point, you're no longer in control of where that bullet stops.
Right.
So I appreciate you sharing the story, because it lets us talk about a safety thing here and kind of you figured it out. Like I say, just go put your target close to the berm and walk up there and do your shooting up there. But yeah, I've done the exact same thing. I appreciate the call, sir. You put a target 10 yards or 25 yards, but you're on a 100-yard target range and you're not looking at the angle and you're actually hitting the ground maybe 50 yards, 25 yards before the berm, and some of them may bounce into the berm, but some of them probably are going over the berm, and that's not a safe situation. I mean, we always say you're responsible for that bullet until it stops moving, and if you have flung it out into the neighborhood, you don't know where it's going. And people say, well, there's not much out there. Well, that's not a lot of, consolation if you end up hitting somebody's car or horse or cow or person or something. You got to be shooting into a berm. So yeah, just think about the physics of it, the angles and everything else, and know where it's going, and get yourself closer to a berm. If you're at a range where you hear ricochets a lot, be concerned, and you might want to find out what's going on and talk to the people who run it. If you can't get it corrected, you may want to go to a different range. I don't like the sounds of ricochets. That tells me that you got bullets flying through the air. You don't know where they're going. 866-TALK-GUN. Okay, back with you. 866-TALK-GUN. That's interesting. Of course, the election being called for Joe Biden by the news media, various networks. And now I'm just looking here. Newsmax is declaring we're not calling the election for Biden. So they're going to hold on to saying it still hasn't been decided yet. I think a lot of people watching the circus that was the election returns, watching Fox News, just finally got disgusted with Fox. I know I did. And a lot of them said, well, what else is there? And a lot of them went and found Newsmax. I have to admit, I thought it was a website. I didn't realize that they actually had a TV channel. I was able to find that streaming. Looked at that. I mean, it's a little bit different, maybe a little bit further right. Of course, Fox is certainly not right or conservative anymore. Anyway, it was just, Jim says, One America News is also a good choice, and it certainly is. So OEN is certainly a good option as well. Don't know what you're watching. I did, after a while, just kind of got fed up. I was bouncing between, MSNBC, CNN, and Fox, and finding that there wasn't that much difference. Oh, well. Line one, Benny's with us. Corpus Christi, Texas. Hey, Benny, talk about the election. Talk to me.
About the election?
I thought you ordered.
Do you have a 5-second delay?
now, behave.
I can be nice. Well, at the top of your first hour, you were asking what we're carrying these days.
Yeah.
For our EDCs.
Right.
Personally, I picked up the Smith & Wesson M&P M2.0 with 3.6-inch barrel and 9mm, and it comes with your 2 15-round magazines and the two sleeves for the 17-round magazines, which of course, I purchased immediately and
right.
then just here recently picked up a few more because, you know, you can't go without less than six magazines.
That's what I've heard.
Well, you know, I've got the great enabler helping me out here.
And I do what I can, so, man.
We also picked up a couple of few more magazines for my wife's Beretta PX4 Storm subcompact that she carries. And while I do the HST loads in mine, she's doing a gold dots in her 9mm. So, you know. Well,
interesting. How did that happen? How did you guys decide on different ammo?
I've got a friend of mine who is a former SWAT team commander from Illinois, just south of Chicago. And I figured if that's what he was using, then
so he
went with for my wife.
Okay, so he was using the gold dot.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nothing wrong with gold dots. That's been good ammo for a long, long time, and they generally work very well. So then why did you go with HST?
I did a lot of research online, watching the meat targets and seeing how they do. I looked over Lucky Gunner's website, you know, watched the mushrooming and gelatin.
Right.
And saw that it passed the FBI protocol.
Right.
So I thought, well, that's the direction I'm going.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad choice. It just, I found it interesting that you've decided on two different loads for the husband and the wife. That's interesting.
It is. It really is. And then, you know, if I ever run out, she's got plenty more. And if she should run out, I've got plenty more.
As long as you know where that ammo shoots with your gun, because they may not shoot to the exact same point of aim.
Exactly. Hopefully, we'd be close enough to our target that, you know, wouldn't have to worry about it.
Well, yeah. And if, like people say, look, if you're 25 or 50 yards away, you're going to have a hard time explaining why you shot somebody, generally speaking. So,
exactly.
There's that.
Or 2 inches lower than the last cartridge.
I got to tell you, I like your choice of that M&P 2.0 with 3.6-inch barrel. I think a double-stack mid-size, maybe mid-compact, with that 3.5, roughly 3.5-inch barrel is a really nice sweet spot. So you can have, you know, depending on the model, 12, 15, maybe even 17 rounds, and carry an extra magazine. And with a 3.5-inch barrel, if you know what you're doing, there's no reason you couldn't hit a 12 by 12 inch piece of steel at 50 yards with that, at least half.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. We've been to the outdoor range and done much better than that. Unfortunately, my wife shows me up at the range, but you know, that's neither here nor there that she's a better shot.
And I'm sure she's never reminded you of that.
No, actually, she's been very gracious about it. She's never thrown it in my face, not once.
She just puts the targets up on the refrigerator.
Yeah, there you are.
It's like the pictures of the kids, right?
I realized later this week, Veterans Day, just happens to be your birthday, so I wanted to get ahead and wish you a very, very happy birthday. And thank you for doing all you do.
I appreciate that. That's very kind of you. And I appreciate you sharing what you're carrying these days. And I got to scoot to the break here because they're yelling at me. But thank you, sir. Yeah, what are you carrying these days? What is your EDC, your everyday carry? Pistol? What cartridge? Do you carry an extra magazine? Do you carry just a five-shot revolver? I mean, there's no wrong answers, but I am curious as to how, what you're carrying and kind of what the thought process was that got you to that. Our number is 866-TALK-GUN. I'm Tom Gresham.
The pistol that redefined pocket carry just got even better. The Ruger LCP2 has improved sights, an easy-to-rack slide, a larger textured grip surface for a secure grip and recoil reduction, and a short, crisp, single-action trigger pull for real-world accuracy. It's so small and light that there's no reason to ever leave home without your LCP2, a serious pistol in a pint-sized package. Learn more about the LCP2 at Ruger.com.
It's time for a thanks giveaway. Grand prizes include the Daniel Defense DD-M4 V7 in 5.56 NATO or the Brownells BRN-180S Gen 2 Complete Upper in 300 Blackout, paired with a custom double-star lower receiver with strong arm pistol brace for easy compact storage. Eight first prize winners will receive either a Hodgdon product voucher or a gift certificate to Timney Triggers. Enter now through December 4th at guntalk.com/win.
Are you looking for a place to shoot? The National Shooting Sports Foundation has a great website called wheretoshoot.org. It's the largest database of shooting ranges on the internet. It's also a great resource for shooters where you can find video tips, printable targets, and a lot more. Find it online at wheretoshoot.org. And while you're there, download their free iPhone app. That's wheretoshoot.org.
All right, we're back with you. We got Mark, we got Monty. You guys just hang in here. We're going to get to you in just a second here. But we'd have room for you if you'd like to join us. 866-TALK-GUN will get you in here. I'm Tom Gresham. Let's start off with Mark on 2 out of Pennsylvania. Hey, Mark, what you been working on?
Hey, Tom. I've been working on a project for my farrier. He had a 32 Remington pump-action rifle sitting on his mantle, and he wanted to get it back up and running again. So I took the project upon myself, broke the gun down, cleaned it. That took about 3 days because it was all goobered up. It hadn't been, you know, used since the mid-70s.
Yeah.
Got that going and then started the process of finding reloading dies, brass, and recipes to create the original 170-grain load.
Hmm.
Took about 2 years to find everything, got the loads assembled, and he now has a functioning pump-action 32 Remington that, with the original, mind you, the original four-power Redfield scope.
You know, I don't think I...
Four shots touching at 100 yards with that scope.
Well, I don't think I have ever... Not only have I never shot, I'm not sure I've ever even seen a 32 Remington.
Right now, I couldn't even tell you what the rifle was. I've got pictures, but I didn't get a good picture of the brand name. All I know is that the magazine has a twist to the barrel, or to the magazine chamber itself is twisted.
Oh.
Might be a Savage, I'm not sure.
I was just going to say, I think that's a Savage, because I knew that they had that in a 35 Remington. You sure it's a 32? It's not a 35 Remington.
Oh, it's a 32. It's not a 32 Special. Oh. It's a straight 32 Remington.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably that Savage. Oh, my God. For some reason, the number 141, model 141 jumps in my head. I could be wrong on that. Maybe a model 14. But the spiral magazine tube is what got my attention because I remember that. My old buddy John Wooters, who was like one of the gurus of whitetail hunting, had one of those 35 Remington that he liked a lot. Well, that's very cool. What a great project.
Yeah, well, I was excited to take it on because, I mean, I've been doing a lot of my own reloading for just about every firearm I own, from pistol to rifle to shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, they haven't made ammunition since, I think they stopped making it in 77, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, heck, I can cover this. And like I said, it took a while to find everything, but when I did, it came together pretty quick. And then, you know, started with reduced loads, found what he could shoot, because at the time he was 70-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And although that wouldn't beat him up too bad, and we settled on what he could comfortably shoot, and that was the one that put four bullets damn near touching at 100 yards. I'm like, yep. If it's brown, it's good.
There you go. You're a good man, Mark. I appreciate you sharing that information and then putting that project together. I do want to grab Monty on 4 out of Montana. Hey, Monty, you still there?
Yes.
Okay, cool. What you up to? You doing a shooting range?
I want to develop one, yes.
Okay. For your own use or for commercial?
No, I'd say the commercial. Have competitions there.
Okay.
Or training.
So what do you need to know? You need to know basically how to build one or what's involved?
Well, I kind of want the rules that I got to go by.
Gotcha. Okay, I got a place for you to start. The National Shooting Sports Foundation has somebody who does nothing but that. That helps you with the information about the rules, you know, safety, design, all the rest of it can help you. And the National Shooting Sports Foundation, their website is nssf.org. And they are the trade association for the firearms industry.
Again, say, run that by me again.
Okay, it's National Shooting Sports Foundation. Their website is November Sierra Sierra Foxtrot, NSSF.org.
Okay.
If you go there, they'll have the phone number. You can give them a call. Ask to, you know, tell them what you're doing. They'll put you to the right person, and they have an entire packet of information they can send you about building a range and starting that, and also what's involved in running a commercial shooting range operation. Okay.
Okay.
Good deal. Well, I wish you luck with it. I hope it works out for you. It's we need more ranges. Thank you, Monty. We do need more ranges. It's interesting. We need ranges of two different types. It jumps into my head. I'm just kind of thinking about this as we go. What Monty's talking about is building a range where you can shoot 900 to 1,000 yards, because a lot of people are now interested in long-range shooting, and it's fun stuff. I mean, you challenge yourself, you learn, you know, figuring out the wind, maybe work with a spotter, just all the rest of it. And, of course, you can get some very cool gear. It's an excuse to buy more gear. But you know what else we need? Maybe even more than that. We need urban shooting ranges. We need indoor shooting ranges in the cities. We need places that are convenient so you don't have to drive 50 miles out of town to go to an outdoor range. And those are being built all around the country. I mean, they're popping up all over, and some really nice ones. They're not cheap to build. And you need to be, you know, just from a financial standpoint, from a business standpoint, you need to be where there's a pretty good sized market, because you're still going to be peeling off just a small percentage of the people. Why do I say we need that? Every time somebody builds one, I use the Centennial Gun Club in Denver as a good example. You go into the Centennial Gun Club, it's bright, it's clean, it's safe. It's very retail-oriented. The staff is very well-trained, very helpful. But if you go and sit there or stand there for an hour, what you see is a lot of young people coming through, people in their 20s and 30s, maybe 40s. You see couples with their kids coming through. If these people had to drive 50 miles and go to a range where there's nothing but a berm and a burn barrel, I'm not sure they would. But when they can go into a place that looks more like an Apple store than a dirt pit, they're going to feel comfortable. When you go into the parking lot and you see not only high-end modern pickup trucks, but you see Audis and Mercedes and Lexus parked in the parking lot. You're going, okay, this is good. This is a new group of people. These are the new shooters I've heard about. And for us as a group to be a political force, we need them involved. We need them engaged. We need them to have skin in the game. And there's also, clearly, as we can see from these, there is a chance for somebody to make a profit in building these. Now, whether you build it from scratch or you go and find an old circuit city or some building that's not being used anymore and you convert that to a shooting range, that's not a bad way to go, too. If you thought you wanted to do something like that, again, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, they're kind of the go-to place for this, nssf.org. They have all sorts of information. They will help you. They help with the design. They help you with the legal stuff. They help you with the whole deal. I would just encourage you, if you're thinking about doing it, absolutely, we need more shooting ranges. Tom Gresham here. Be right back. All right, we're back. Let's go talk to Connie. She's on 2 out of Boulder, Colorado. Connie, thank you so much for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to comment. You were saying the reasons we should be optimistic about our Second Amendment rights with Barrett on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you know this, but the problem is, if as millions of us expect, the Democrats do get through packing the Supreme Court, they can put in a law that would let them not even have to wait for somebody to die or resign to put on more justices that out.
Oh, yes.
Outvote.
No,
so
you're right.
I don't think we're quite as safe as you were explaining.
Well,
I wish I could think what you were saying would happen.
If, and I don't know if you caught it, a good part of our conversation today was the importance of the two Senate races that are going to run off in Georgia.
Yeah, I did not. In fact, I just turned on your station a few minutes ago, and I listened to you saying how we should be so glad. I am very glad that Barrett got appointed to the court, but I fear, you know, the thing is, depending on what happens to those two Georgia races, the Senate may be able to block any action like that, but otherwise, I don't know. I'm hoping the best for Georgia.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, basically, we all are involved in this Georgia race, the two races, whether or not we live in Georgia or not, because this is, as my buddy Dan Zelenka said, this is for all the marbles. These two, because if the Democrats win both of those, now it's 50-50 and Kamala Harris breaks the tie, so the Democrats control the Senate. But if the Republicans win, and I think it's either going to be the Republicans or the Democrats are going to win both of them. I doubt it's going to be split. If the Republicans win, now Mitch McConnell is still in charge of the Senate, and we can stop them from getting rid of the filibuster, court packing, all the rest of the stuff. And, of course, Joe Biden was the architect of the 1994 Clinton gun ban, the so-called assault weapons ban. He's done it once. He'll do it again. So for all of us, it's not like, oh, gee, I sure hope those people in Georgia take care of this. No, it's up for all of us. And I'm just going to say, I mean, if you're a gun owner, if you care about this stuff, would you not spend $10 or $20 or whatever you could throw into the mix and donate it to the campaigns of the Republicans running in the runoff? That election will take place January the 5th. So we have 2 months on that. It's going to be huge, and everybody in politics understands it, and the money will flow. I mean, not even like water. If there's such a thing as diluted water, it would flow like that. I think Bloomberg is, who knows, he spent $100 million in Florida, got nothing for it. He spent a ton of money in Texas, got nothing for it. For him, honestly, for him, $100 million is nothing. And then you have a whole bunch of other left coast, left wing Democrat billionaires who are going to pour tens or hundreds of millions of dollars into it. We gun owners, we who care about this, cannot sit around and go, well, gee, that's that thing, and I sure hope it goes our way. Hope is not a plan. Hope is not a course of action. Action is the only thing that's going to work. So, I mean, I know you're hearing me and you're saying, yeah. But are you going to make a donation? I am going to make a donation. I'm going to find, and we'll get to all this information over the next few weeks. We'll tell you, you know, how to get there. We're going to try to get the candidates themselves on the show. All right. If you want to talk more about this, or you want to tell me more about your everyday carry, we got Alan and Ken on hold. Don't go anywhere. We're going to get to you guys as well. We can do that during the after show, 866-TALK-GUN. If you haven't heard the after show, shame on you. You got to check it out. This show is available all the time on podcast, anywhere you get your podcasts. So you can check that out. Also go to gundelio.com and you can download it there as well. Have a safe week. Check your six. Carry all the time. Okay?